Accession number 8905, reel number 3.
Commander Clark, reel 3.
So joining the action, I was wounded myself. Shrapnel presumably broke the ulna of my left wrist. So one arm and hand was hanging like a chicken's foot. Quite useless. But when the ship went down, it was a case of everybody for himself, swim if you could. And I picked up an empty wooden ammunition box about 3 foot long, and put it under my left arm, and started swimming in an easterly direction, not really knowing where I was going for some time, at least keeping afloat. And I saw the top of a lighthouse, quite a long way away though, roughly in the direction that I was going. So I went on swimming until dark. And I got in the water, I suppose, must have been 7 o'clock in the morning when I started swimming. And I went on paddling away till roughly 7 o'clock in the evening, when I got to what's called a fishing pagger. It's a little thatched hut on stilts in the shallow water. And I climbed up into this and spent the night there. And then in the morning I decided to go on swimming towards this lighthouse. So I got down to the water again, had another half day paddling along with a broken arm and ammunition box supporting me. And I came across another fishing pagger, which was not far from the mangrove swamps, and there was somebody in it who turned out to be a British Army officer. So I climbed up into that, and after a yarn, we decided to go ashore into the mangrove and see what we could make of the situation ashore. So we swam ashore, and incidentally I had nothing on my feet at that stage. And now, to the best of my memory, time made it a little rusty. Most of that day we were tramping through mangrove, which is most uncomfortable, particularly in bare feet, because they're like it's like walking through mud which has got inverted carrots. The mangrove roots are like inverted carrots, and they tear your feet to bits after a time. But however, we had to stick that. I had to stick it anyway. And just before dusk, we came to a river. And looking down the river, we saw what looked like a native village. So we got into the water and swam down towards it. And we had a somewhat hostile reception by natives, or Indonesians, but we tried to make friends with them, and they put us in an empty hut for the night.
How did their hostility show itself?
Mainly by expression. We guessed. We felt they weren't friendly.
By the look on their faces?
Yes, look on their faces and so on. Anyway, they put us in this hut at one end of the village. And under the hut there were some old, very rotten-looking canoes. So we decided that we must make our escape, go up the river. So during the night, we got down into one of these canoes, and there were some paddles, and we sneaked out and started paddling upstream. We were also joined by two other army officers, and I can't remember the exact stage at which they joined us, but it was very just about this point.
Where had they come from?
Well, they were all survivors from sunken British craft getting away from Singapore.
But not yours?
No, none of them were from mine. So, altogether, there was myself, two army majors, and an army private, who I well remember is a Yorkshireman. And we paddled up day after day up this river. It was really absolute hell because it was a jungle river, you see. When the sun was out, it was so hot as to be almost literal hell. And occasionally you'd get absolute drenching rain and you got sopping wet. And that was almost more unpleasant. And then again you'd get this hot sun and so on. It was a choice of two evils as we went on. And my arm, meanwhile, was poisoned. It had shrapnel in it. And it was swelling up to a colossal size. It was like a bolster. I couldn't see the elbow joint at all. It was like one big bolster, right up to the biceps. And I'd made up my mind that I was going to be a... if I got that far, I was going to be a one-arm Nelson, or else I was going to be out. But certainly lose my arm. And this Yorkshire private said to me, after we'd been doing this for about 4 days or something like that, he said, "When I was a boy, sir, and I had anything go septic, my granny used to put on a soap and sugar poultice," which I thought was rather amusing in the middle of a tropical jungle. But we got to a little clearing where there were some native huts. So we tied up alongside, and this young private went to one of the huts, and he came back with some yellow soap and some brown sugar. He cut it into thin little slices, kneaded the sugar with the soap, shoved it on my wound. He also brought back some hot, wet rice, so boiled rice, I put it, really, which he put inside my rather grubby handkerchief, put that on top of the soap and sugar, and wrapped the whole lot round with a stocking. And there was an empty hut again in this place, so we took up our quarters in that, the natives allowed us to. Do you know, within 36 hours, that arm was down to normal, changing it, I think, twice a day, as far as I remember, changing the dressing twice a day. Within 36 hours, it was down to its normal size, and within 48 hours, it was sucking out the shrapnel. So after that, I put a bit of boarding up against it as a splint, and it healed itself while we were in that hut. We were in that hut for about 5 weeks altogether, best part of 5 weeks.
Doing what?
Well, just existing. I mean, there was nothing to do. One officer and the private had gone on because they were fit. I was left in the hut with the other army officer who was very unfit, so there was nothing we could do. The natives wouldn't help us at all with boats or canoes or anything. They just provided us with rice every day, that's all. And incidentally, we ate things that we gathered from under the hut, a sort of nut thing, which we found later on were actually rubber nuts and are supposed to be poisonous. We didn't realise it. They must be a very mild poison anyway, because we ate quite a number of them. But then, after about 4 weeks, the natives came along and said, "Would you like us to take you to Palembang? There's a hospital there, and the Australians have driven out the Japanese, and you can get a good supply of clothing." Well, the object was, my object anyway, was to get to the west coast, to Bencoolen, and escape by boat to the Indian Ocean. But Palembang seemed to be a good staging post. So we said, all right. So they paddled us up till this river got fairly narrow, and then they told us how to cross through the jungle by the thick jungle they call the Rimba, the thickest jungle. And the only way they get through it is by felling trees and walking along the trunks of the trees as a sort of pathway, you see. So we spent one night doing that, and it was very exciting. You could hear all sorts of animal cries during the night. As far as I remember, it was a moonlight night, so we could see what we were doing. We could see where we were putting our feet and that sort of thing, but it was very exciting. And we were met at the other end by some natives who again put us in a hut to discuss the situation. And then this was a rather more civilized spot. They got a car of some sort, told us they'd take us to Palembang, to the hospital. We got into this car and they drove us to the river. We got into canoes, taken across the river to the other side of Palembang. And I don't know whether, of course, we were pretty weak by this time. 6 weeks on nothing but rice doesn't improve your strength. I remember while we were crossing the river, we saw some Japanese planes fly over. You could see the poached egg on the bottom, which might possibly have alerted us. But then, after all, even if it had been occupied by the British, it still wouldn't have prevented Japanese planes coming over. So we weren't alerted. They put us in a tiny little, what you might call a mini bus, when we got to the other side, and it drove us out just outside the town. And suddenly we stopped, and one of the Malays got out. I looked and I saw a barrier and a couple of Japanese soldiers with rifles and bayonets on either side of the barrier. And I tried to express my... I tried to put a question to the Malays, and they just pretended there was nothing to worry about. And he came back with these two sentries. And, of course, there we were. We'd been betrayed to the Japs, taken prisoner.
Were you paying the Sumatrans during the whole time after you landed?
Oh, no, there was nothing possibly we could have paid them with. No, we were absolutely destitute. We had nothing except the bare clothes we stood up in. Shirt, shorts, that's about it.
Do you recollect the name of the private who saved your arm?
Yes, Ralph Simpson.
What unit did he belong to?
Well, he was a Yorkshireman. Now, wait a minute. I think, but I'm not sure, that he was in the Ordnance. I'm not too sure of that. I did contact him after the war, went and saw him up in Yorkshire.
Were you in agony with your arm?
Oh, yes, very painful.
And when you were swimming in the water, was there any danger from sharks to you?
Well, funnily enough, I had no... I had no fear of sharks, and in the event there weren't any, certainly didn't come anywhere near me. I did hear of one survivor in this part of the sea who was killed by a shark, but I think probably what happened was that the shelling and bombing that took place in that area had driven the sharks away, frightened them all away. But a fellow prisoner, a Dutchman, who was head of the of a very prestigious Dutch marine museum there, told me that the Banker Straits, which was the bit where we were sunk, was in fact the most shark-infested water in the world.
When you encountered the Japanese destroyer, did you consider surrendering without a fight?
Oh, no. No.
Why not?
Well, I don't know. The only alternative, I mean, one doesn't, I don't think one does. The only alternatives that occurred to me were either to run for it or to do what one could, and run for it, one immediately realised, was quite impossible. You couldn't do it.
Did nobody aboard suggest surrendering?
No. I don't suppose they'd have liked to, even if it occurred to them.
You were talking about how earlier on, whilst you were in Singapore, how hopeless you said it was to assemble sampans for an evacuation.
Yes.
Why, in fact, was it that a hopeless task?
That's a difficult one to answer. That, but it soon became evident that it was impossible. The harbour was absolutely crammed with native sampans. Some of which were, I think some had motors in, but others hadn't. And the whole business of choosing them, selecting them, berthing them, it was... I can't describe the complications and the chaos. It was... I think there were eventually 10,000 troops... were at the surrender of Singapore. It's an impossible feat unless you got big ships to take them away.
The force, the commando force that you were operating,
I called it. West Coast Raiders. We were called West Coast Raiders. Yes.
Was that just the name which you knew the force by, or was it a more general name?
The name I gave it.